Let's dedicate the teaching today. We're going to dedicate to Lawrence Hess, your dad. His name is
Joseph Ben Yosef. Joseph Yosef Ben Benno.
Benbenah,
Thank you very.
okay?
Thank you.
And also for a Refuah Shleima for my wife's aunt, Rivka Chana Bat Tzipora, Sheva Refuah Shleima. Okay. So this teaching from the Nesir Shalom, he was the he was the head of the Slanim Chasidim, and their headquarters in Jerusalem on that Mea Sharm Street. If you take it, actually, on one of my trips on the Friday night, we walked to the Tish. It was like 12 o'clock at night. And there were 1,000+ people. And so one of the guys turns to me, he goes, "We have a hard time getting a minyan on Shabbos morning. And they've got 1,000 people here and it's 12 o'clock in the morning." He's like, "This is impressive." But yeah, so his writings are really very beautiful, very clear. And this piece he talks about this pasuk that's over here. So let me show you this verse. These two verses actually, and they don't make sense. Okay, so let's see what does make sense. It says, "And from the day on which you bring the sheaf of elevation offering, so the second day of Passover, right? So not the first day, but the second day, they would bring what they called the Karban Omer, a sacrifice called the Omer, and they would take it from barley, and the system, the way it worked was, is that each year, from the Omer sacrifice, that permitted now going forward any of the prior year's grain to be eaten. But after that, anything that was grown post that would have to wait to the next year for this carbon, for this sacrifice to come to allow it's permitted." It's referenced as something called chadash, which means new. But the idea of, like, if you would go to some of the pizza stores, like and you look at their sign, they'll say, "We only serve yashan," which is old. What does that mean? So grain that's coming from prior to the second day of Passover. So there's a cycle that you'd have to, like, from this day forward, any grain grown would have to wait till the Karban Omer was brought the next year. So there are people today that will only eat grain flour that's coming from what we call Yashan. It applies for sure in the land of Israel. The question is, does it apply anywhere else or outside? So there are people who are more stringent who will be careful not to have flour coming from something that's called Chadash. The grain that's been grown since that second day of Passover till the following year. Since we don't have a carbon omer, we don't have this carbon sacrifice anymore, we just use the day of the 16th of Nisan as the day that permits that last year's grain from being used. So if you see we only use Yashan, they're saying we're careful not to use the grain of this of the flour that's coming from grain that was grown in this year since the 16th of Nisan. In the United States, because there's such an abundance of grain, probably most flour is coming from a prior year. It's not like we're using new grains for the flour that you're getting in the store. It's usually There's a, you know, it's probably from a year prior anyway, so you're probably okay. But there are people that are very careful, and they'll even check. They can tell. There are ways of checking to see that the back of a bag of flour, what crop it came from, to track it back to see that this is not chadash. Okay, but that's totally as a side. But this is within the context when we talk about an omer offering. That's what we're talking about. So it says here that you're counting. And from the day on which you bring the sheaf of elevation, the day after the Sabbath, okay, You shall count off 7 weeks. They must be complete. You must count until the day after the seventh week, 50 days. So you're going to, so it says, Ad Mirachasar, till from the day after the Shabbos. See, the translation is a little bit more, I'm going to do a little bit more of a exact translation. Ad Mirachasar Shabbos, until after the we'll say the seventh week, you'll count 50 days. And then you shall bring an offering of new grain to the Lord. V'grafta mincha chadash al Hashem, which is referring to at the holiday of Shavuot. You're going to bring this new mincha, this new offering to God. Okay? So what's going, what are the issues in this pasuk? It says you'll count. Now the biggest issue that everybody has is that it says you should count starting mimacharat haShabbat, from the day after the Sabbath, miyom haviyachom et omerat, on the day that you bring the omer offering, 7 weeks you count. So now 7 weeks you count is what? How many days? 49 days. But then the next verse says you'll count 50 days. Okay? So which one is it? Are you counting 49 days or are you counting 50 days? Is it 7 weeks, which last time I checked was 49, or are you counting 50? So that's kind of a weird thing.
Well, it says they must be complete.
Okay, what's complete? 49.
Well, when you finish the 49th day, you're actually into the 50th day.
Lawrence, 7 complete weeks is how many days?
49 days.
Thank you. That's right.
But once you complete the 49th day.
Yeah. No, come on. There are 50. No. There are 50. I mean, 49 complete.
Because,
yeah.
Well, that's like you're saying you're actually 10, you're pregnant for 10 months.
When I'm counting 7 complete weeks, how many days am I counting?
49 days.
Thank you. Good.
All right, well, maybe they're building a fence. You know, we've been build a fence around Shabbos.
No. We don't have to be. We're reading the words. We don't have to get crazy yet. Not yet. We have to start out. Let's keep it simple.
All right.
Okay. Now go back to the verse 15 when it says, "Svartem lachem mimacharat haShabbat." What day do we start counting the Omer? Right, we count the Omer. We count it from the 16th of Nisan. Okay, meaning the second day of Passover. Okay. So, the question everybody asks is: if that's the case, why would the Torah not just tell us that and say you're going to count for you Svartim Lachem, which is a very interesting idea. Also, the fact that the Torah is telling us, I want you to count for you Svartim Lachem. But mimacharat haShabbat, from the day after Shabbos. So now I'm really confused. Are you telling me that it has to be the day after Shabbos? Am I supposed to take it literally? Or is it saying something a little bit different? Or maybe it's trying to give us a teaching about what the first day of Pesach is, calling it mimacharat haShabbat. Here, let's see this. Rashi says, from the morrow after the day of rest, from the morrow after the first day of Passover festival. It's telling us it's after. And look, by the way, on your point about the idea of complete weeks, here he says that one has to begin counting in the evening. For otherwise, they would not be complete. Okay, so
right after Havdalah.
Yeah, meaning like you count the day. We always start the day at night, right? When the sun sets, that's when the day starts, in terms of that day. And so, it's interesting. So, but this first thing about the idea that it's the day after Shabbos, and that's referring to the first day of Passover. Let's just look at the The question really is, why would you refer to Pesach as Shabbos? If I take it literally, it would mean that I would figure out that week and then I would start counting the day after Shabbos, not the day after Pesach. But Rashi's clearly telling us, based on the Gemara here in Menachos, that it's talking about the first day of Passover. So let's try to figure some stuff out here. So let's ask some questions.
So go back to the question of the day.
So first things first, why would you call the first day of Passover Shabbos? Right? If you think about that. Now this is not a teaching. Or maybe he does bring it in here also. Actually, he does.
Could that be just in case that second day is Shabbos, or you want to make sure that have anything to do with it?
No, I mean, it's a very strange, I was talking to a friend of mine on Friday night, and I said there's this idea that there are certain verses in the Torah that unless you explain it from some kind of Kabbalistic perspective, it just doesn't make sense. Or what I mean by that, by the Kabbalistic, I mean like there's much more, or a Hasidic approach, like there's more going on in the wording that's teaching us something. There's very deep that's going on here, right? The idea that the Torah would tell us, it's like when Rashi or any of the commentators are looking at the verses, they're saying, what is this going on here? Like, why would the Torah tell us you should count for you from the day after Shabbos, from the day that you bring, which is the day that you bring the Omer offering, 7 weeks, complete weeks, you should count. But just say, if you're trying to tell me to count from the second day or the day after the first day of Passover, why don't you just tell me that? Why are you giving me this, the day after Shabbos thing? I mean, it's just like, as you would say, it's extremely convoluted, right? Unless you're trying to convey a very important message or very deep idea that's being conveyed here in terms of what it means to say the day after Shabbos. You should know, historically, there are a number of these situations where you have this kind of strange wording or ambiguity, let's say, that leads to major issues within, you know, our, you know, we call this the approach that we have here, and what's really survived, whether your background in terms of your knowledge of Torah or observance, what has survived the general approach is what we call that of we'll call it rabbinic Judaism, but the way we'd read the Torah, even in all different sects, they're going to read it with more of the rabbinic approach, like we're doing now. Mimakras HaShabbos shouldn't be taken literally. Like an eye for an eye isn't taken literally. But there was a period of time in Jewish history where you had what we called the Tzedukim, which said, I only understand the Torah on its face value. I don't have any fancy or deeper interpretations of these words, and so I'm going to take this literally. And when it says I'm going to count from the day after Shabbos, means I'm going to count from the day after Shabbos, not the day after the first day of Pesach. And then there are a number of these situations where you have these weird, you know, ambiguous type of situations that led to these issues of how they started practicing based on the fact that they wouldn't listen to the more creative, let's call it, type of interpretations. So they kind of like simplified or took away the complexity of Torah. Because if you say that it literally means an eye for an eye, we don't believe that. We don't believe that if you knock a guy's eye out, that the punishment is knock the other guy's eye out. That's not how rabbinic Judaism understood that. It meant that you have to pay a penalty of the value of the other person's eye. And there are many of these types of situations. So bringing it back here, when you have this type of thing, it's saying, now Rashi right away tells you, he tells you, the Gemara is telling us, the Talmud tells us, this is not meant to mean the day after Shabbos. It's meant to mean the day after the first day of Pesach, which then brings us to, okay, then what? What is this point of telling it to us in this way? Tell me it straight. Give me the thing. It's on the 16th of Nisan. You should start counting. So the point is that it's going to now tell us a very deep idea about what the first day of Pesach is about. And by the way, when we understand that, it will also bring us to explain this next problem, which is, it's telling us to count 7 weeks times 7 is 49, and then the verse tells us that you're supposed to count 50 days. I don't understand. Is it 49 or is it 50? And the answer is, if you understand what Mimachras HaShabbos means, what the day after Shabbos, meaning that Passover is now being defined as a day of Sabbath, then I will explain to me exactly what it means, 49 or 50. Okay? So he says here, he brings down, and I saw this, and it could be that it was the same source of the Haggadah of Mata Moshe, which is the Rebbe from Kuznets. Okay, I'm not sure who, I'm not familiar with who he is, but I saw this explained elsewhere, and maybe it's him or this was a popular way of approaching. Is that what does it mean when you describe the first night of Pesach as Shabbos? So we have in our construct of holidays, we have Shabbos on one side and we have the other holidays on the other side, and they're actually compared and contrasted, and the comparison or the contrast between Shabbos and the other holidays is that Shabbos happens no matter what. Shabbos is something that's baked into the system. We don't do anything. We're basing it on a 7-day week. You have 6 days in your Shabbos. The holidays, that system, is based on when you would consecrate the new month. So now we have a set calendar. Monday and Tuesday are Rosh Chodesh. Okay? But normally, the way the system worked was, a person sighted the new moon. They ran up to Jerusalem. They testified how they saw it, when they saw it, what they saw it, blah, blah, blah. And then they consecrated the new month. So based on that system, they would determine when the holidays were. So it wasn't an automatic, like Shabbos. Shabbos happened no matter what. When it came to our Yom Tov, to the holiday system, that was completely based on our determining when the month would start. So we say that you have this contrast of Shabbos, God, it's almost like God completely dictates it, in a sense, whereas Yom Tov, we're involved, we're partners in that process. So now, saying it that way, Usfartim Mimacharas HaShabbos is saying, you know what the first day of Passover was about? Coming out of Egypt, that was completely divinely inspired. We were almost like, we were completely passive in the sense of how we participated in this event. The same way that Shabbos, in a certain sense, is coming no matter what, because God said, I created the world in 6 days, rested on the seventh day, I rested, you should rest too. The nature of Shabbos is that of completely divinely inspired. So now, if I were to look at the first day of Pesach, and with the way he's describing it, Machras HaShabbos, it's the day after Shabbos, meaning Pesach first day, Shabbos-like. Why? Because it's completely divinely inspired. This was orchestrated by God. Okay, come, we're leaving Egypt now. Okay, God, we're going. Now there was an act of belief, emunah. And the fact that we went for the ride, but it was completely orchestrated by God. Were we deserving? Maybe yes, maybe no, not really. We weren't really, as they say, we weren't really holding. We weren't really, let's say, it's a better English word. We're really not on the level of deserving being taken out at that point. We in a sense experienced this incredible inspiration, but it was completely coming from above. Like we were passive observers in a certain sense. Even though, yes, we used our feet to walk out, but we were like, you know, go that way, okay? And we started walking. So the idea of referring to the first day of Pesach, the first day of Passover, as Shabbos, that's expressing that situation of being the passive, being the one, watching a kind of a thing play out where it's completely God that's driving this, okay? Hence, Mimachras HaShavas. So
what does it have to do with the 49th day or the 50th?
Good. Okay, one step at a time. Hey, I'm just establishing. First things first.
Boy, you're pushing.
No, he's good. It's good. It's okay. Now, so bring it. So wrap it up. You know, like let's.
So come on, get to the point.
Okay.
Here,
you know? Wow. Okay. So now, I saw this in the Sifsei Chaim. It's a more contemporary book, also, even though it's Yerushalmi, not that, you know. But basically, he explains that this process of leaving Egypt, in a sense, that first night of Pesach that we end up having our Seder, is commemorating like almost like a flash of light that we were so not deserving at that point. We weren't really ready. We're slaves. We're really in a small state of being. Our mindset is very small, and we then witness this incredible flash of spiritual energy, inspiration. But it's like a flash. It only lasts for that moment and then goes away. Meaning we were not people that were on any elevation. We were we were very, very spiritually limited at that point. But we experienced a burst of light or a burst of spiritual energy at that moment. Goes away, and now we're back to being, you know, our regular, simple selves. And at that point, we are continuing on a path which leads us to Mount Sinai 50 days later. Right, so for counting the day of the first night, if you count the first night itself, meaning the first day of Pesach, and now you're 49 days of counting, so the process of the 49 is a continuation of what happened. So meaning like, we have this inspiration, first night, as we leave Egypt, that first day. Now, it kind of like, we weren't capable of really holding on to that incredible spiritual inspiration. It goes away. It's fleeting in a sense. It leaves an impact on us. We're like, whoa, what was that? Now we start the process, and for 49 days, we continue the process of leaving Egypt. And so when we count the 7 weeks, we are counting as a continuation of the first day of Pesach. So now I'm counting 49 days. That 49 days of counting is a continuation of my leaving the land of Egypt, my leaving slavery, my leaving a place that was completely corrupt in terms of its spiritual and let's say it was a society that was based on everything ran counter to what we end up experiencing as, you know, a people that's going to now, you know, commune with God at Mount Sinai, get the Ten Commandments and the Torah, all that the process of becoming what we call free people. The flash is on the first day of Pesach. We now are calling it Shabbos, and now we're going to count 49 days, continuing the process of Svartim Lachem. We count for ourselves. Because what we're really doing now is, if the first night day of Pesach is completely from God, God says, okay, here guys, now you do the work. And now you're going to count, you are going to count for you 49 days. And this process of the 49 is a continuation, but really it's now your job to be able to get build up yourselves to be able to now not just watch something passively and say, wow, that was amazing, but now we're going to do work on our own for 49 days, continuing the process of leaving Egypt. To be able to be freed as slaves is not enough. A person to become a free person needs to do something. So it's not just enough to walk out of jail, so to speak, but now I'm going to go and, you know, if I'm going to use this analogy, even though it's whatever, but it does to a certain extent capture it. If I to leave jail, you're still a prisoner. Your head's not clear. You're not really a free guy. You might be able to now walk around outside of your jail cell or outside of the big, you know, compound. But in order to really become a person that's free, you got to do the mental work. So the idea for us is that when we came out of Egypt that first night, first day, that's great. Now God says to you, okay, now you're going to be on a pathway. That pathway is 49 days of work. What is that? To get yourself mentally and spiritually prepared to be able to meet me on Mount Sinai. Okay? So now, if I do it that way, what I'm doing is I'm counting 49 days. But it's a process of 50 because that includes the day of Pesach itself, the first day. Okay? So now when we go back and we read the Pasuk, we read the verse, it actually, I think, makes sense. Okay? It says that I'm going to count from the day on which you bring the sheaf of elevation offering, the day after the Sabbath, you shall count off 7 weeks. They must be complete. Now, we said the completeness is the idea that you start counting at night. You must count until the day after the seventh week, which is 50 days. What do you mean 50 days? Well, it's 50 days now from the day after, from the day of Shabbos, which was the first day of Pesach. Then you shall bring the offering of new grain to the Lord. And so the idea of that new, this process of counting for of our own work on ourselves, and counting 50 is including that first day of Pesach. And at the end, it culminates with bringing a new mincha to God. The idea of the new mincha to God, the new grain offering to God on the 50th day, is because now we're in a different place. We've elevated ourselves. It's completely new compared to what had been where we're coming from. So we see that there's a process. So what's interesting is that how long did it take us to leave the land of Egypt? So the answer I would say is it wasn't a one day thing. To become truly free people, we had to work, and even after all that, and we had the revelation at Sinai, we see that there's still issues that, as a people, we're having problems. You know, like we end up sitting with the golden calf. There's all the, you know, there's a continuous process that's required in terms of building up our ability to be truly free and not be encumbered by the past in terms of where we came from and in terms of our Egyptian experience and slavery. So it's not, there are two things, by the way. It's not just being slaves, but what the rabbis explain is that we were totally enmeshed into Egyptian society. So that it ends up that we, I want to show you, look at this pasuk here. This is pretty wild, okay? If you look at this pasuk here, it says, check this out. So it says here, when we left Egypt, okay, here it is. It says, so now, when Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by way of the land of the Philistines, although it was nearer. For God said, the people may have a change of heart when they see war and return to Egypt. So God led the people round about by way of the wilderness at the Sea of the Reeds. Now the Israelites went up armed out of the land of Egypt. Okay, so let's read this again. When Pharaoh sent out the nation, God did not lead them in the path of the Plishtim, even though it was the shorter way, because God said, perhaps the nation will see war and want to go back to Egypt. Okay? So God led them through the pathway of the desert towards the Reed Sea. And then here's in the Hebrew, V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael mi'eretz Yisrael. V'chamushim. Chamushim is interpreted in multiple ways. Here, he interpreted it as they went out armed. But in Hebrew, we always look at the root of a word. So the root of this word is, the way they translate it is that they're armed. But v'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael mi'eretz Yisrael. V'chamushim, you have the root of the word is chamesh, or chamishim, which is five is the, or chamishim is 50, okay? And 50 is how the Jews left Egypt. Now, let's see Rashi here, okay? What does it mean that they came out 50, or okay, so let's see, or chamushim is, so let's see what he says here. It says, the word chamushim means provided with weapons. That's how they translated it here, because he led them by a circuitous route through the wilderness. He brought it about that they went from Egypt well provided. For had he led them circuitously by route of an inhabited district, they would not have provided for themselves everything that they needed, but only a part, like a person who is traveling from place to place and intends to purchase there whatever he will require. But if he were setting out for the wilderness, he must provide all that he will require. This verse is written only with the view of making the ear understand that you should not wonder with regard to the war with Amalek and the war of Sichon and Og and Midian, where did they obtain the weapons? So Rashi is saying that what the Torah is doing here is it's telling you, how did the Jews have the ability to have war and battle with people? They came out armed. Okay. But
the slaves came out armed.
Yeah, right. Okay, so that's, but if it's, okay, they came out with, they're ready for war. Another explanation of this word, chamushim, is only one out of five, one-fifth, went forth from Egypt. And four parts of the people died during the 3 days of darkness because they were unworthy of being delivered. Okay? Chamushim, only 20% of the Jewish people actually left Egypt. Okay? But now, the Nesiva Shalom, here, he says, let me ask you a question. Read the two verses together. It says, when Pharaoh sent the people out, God did not lead them by way of the land of the Philistines because he was worried that they'd seed war and they'd go back to Egypt. So, like, you got the guy out of jail. There's no way he's going back into jail. Even if things, well, you have this, I'd rather be back in jail. I can't handle all these choices. But the truth is that, what do you mean that the Jewish people would want to go back to Egypt?
So, it's actually not unreasonable.
What?
It isn't.
Well, so that's
actually what, not.
So check this out.
It's not unreasonable.
Okay, so listen to this beautiful, the way so he says it. So you know what, the Sefer Shalom, he says, and I forgot who he bases it on, he says, but check it out. He agrees with that, and it says it's built into the word of chamushim. What he's going to say is, I'll read it chamishim 50, because, or 1/50th. V'chamushim is, you know why they're going to go back to Egypt? Or they might want to go back to Egypt? Because they're only 1/50th of the, only a 1% of, or I'm sorry, 2% of themselves has left Egypt. They're still really ensconced in Egypt. You hear? He's playing on the idea of the 50, which we see that the whole process of working through, you're counting 50 or 49 days or a total of a 50 package, because you see here that when they came out, there's this idea of v'chamushim alu, they were only in a state of 1/50th that really had already had that came out from Egypt. You hear? It's a really creative way of reading it. It's like, this is the classic Hasidic like way of reading a pasuk. The pasuk shot, meaning the straight reading, is either they were armed or only 20% of the Jewish people came out. The Nesivas Shalom is saying, how I would read it, is that the reason that they had a danger of wanting to go back to Egypt is because they were still very much, who they were was Egyptian or ensconced in that society, right? And how do you see it? Because the Chamushim Alu, the 50%, 1/50th came out of the Jewish people came out from Egypt. They were still very much, if you think, take it down to percentage-wise, they were only 1/50 of them, the 49 out of 50% was still Egyptian. So that was the issue. When God said, I got to be careful how I lead them because I don't want them to get into turmoil, it's because they're still most of themselves, like majority, 49%, or let's say, we'd say 98%, 40, right, is still, had only 1/50th had come out of Egypt. You hear? So he'd say like a very cute idea of where he's saying, yeah, clearly they were still so connected to Egypt that I don't want to put them any way questioning because they'll just want to go right back. But he picks up on that in the way that you have this the chamushim. He'll take it as 1/50th of the Jewish of the Jews left Egypt in the sense of
it could also be psychologically, not necessarily in terms of people. It could be
no, right, right. That's no. So that's exactly what the Nesivas Shalom is saying, is a psychological observation. Exactly.
That's how. But the word isn't in there in the translation, 50th.
No, well, again, it's to say it this way is not so crazy. It's not the way, if you're going to say, if I read the words straightforward, I'll come up with the way Rashi said it. Rashi says either it means armed or it means one fifth, right? But the idea that it's in the 50, because you can read it, v'chamushim v'chamishim, it's not such a stretch to read it that way. And so he's saying, I'm coming up with that reading based on the fact that in the verse prior, it says the people may have a change of heart when they see war and return to Egypt. Why? Because only a partial amount of themselves came out of Egypt. What do I mean by partial? Meaning the person who came out of Egypt was only had only partially come out at this point. The majority of himself was still in Egypt. And we see that throughout this story of the Exodus, the Jewish people, when things get rough, they come to Moshe, we don't have water, we don't have food, we had it better in Egypt, we want to go back to Egypt. It's a constant struggle because naturally it makes sense. You can be in a objectively better place, but when things get tough, I'd rather go back to the bad known than the good unknown, right?
That's a classic. I mean, I take that away from the Passover every single year, is that personal growth is uncomfortable and frightening or not easy. And therefore, it's your inclination to then go back
revert
to what you were comfortable with,
right.
even if that meant you were a slave.
Correct. Exactly. So that's so the beauty
you
here,
encountered this multiple times throughout your life and through the year, is that things that are going to push you, just like the Jews were being pushed for spiritual growth, can be uncomfortable, and therefore you have to push through that and not be frightened of that.
Correct. And so that's what the Nesivas Shalom is saying to us is that look, I see this, that I'm going to connect that line in Beshalach, which we just read, to the verse in Vayikra 22, Leviticus 22, I think that's where it is, hold on, Amor, I think that's it, Did I get it right? Did I get it right or not? Was it 22? Yeah, okay. It was 23. Sorry, 23. So Leviticus 23. And that the whole idea of counting, of our 50-day count, right, is totally tied in. It's like you see how deep it runs. That when you're talking about 50, the number 50, it's tied into what happened at the beginning here. So as they're coming out of Egypt, and you see this word, we call it V'chamushim alu, and that's also 50, the state of being of 50 left. And then now, after the day of Shabbos, I'm going to count the 50 days. That's counting with the day of Shabbos, as we said, the day of Pesach itself, the first day of leaving Egypt, and I'm going to count 50 days because I need, that's, so he's saying how deep it goes, that the number 50 is at play, that I need 49 and 50. So then the question is, what's the significance of 50 vis-a-vis the sevens, right? You have seven sevens.
Usually seven is a spiritual number, so it makes more sense to say, okay, 7 weeks of 7, 49.
So what is 7, though? 7 would be the nature, right? God, the one thing that, it's interesting, Alana has been giving these classes about ancient Egypt. And there's this whole question about how do we see in Egyptian history, and when you go into the Egyptian history, a correlation between the Exodus account, the biblical Exodus account, and the historical Egyptian. Do we see that there was any type of hint to the fact that is there any archaeological evidence of the Exodus story?
Is there?
So it actually now it's coming out that they found writings that indicate that they found hieroglyphics that talk about things that would correspond with the Exodus story. But what's interesting is one of the reasons that perhaps the dating, just if you use their conventional dating to tie together the dating of the Torah, they don't seem to correspond. Like you said, what's going on here? And then what comes out is that they didn't necessarily have a 7-day week in Egypt. Okay? Which is really wild. If you think about it today, there's nowhere in the world, I don't think that I'm aware of, we should do more research on it, but it seems to be the 7-day week is pretty much accepted, right? But if you don't, if you have a different way of counting your weeks than your whole calendar, then you can't say, I can't get my calendar to jive with your way of, you're not counting time the way I am. How would it be even possible to tie my dating to your dating? It doesn't work. So if they have like a 10-day week or something like that, the whole thing gets blown out of the water. So like, it's right there. It's just like things just will not correspond. It just doesn't work. So that's, but the idea of the sevens, the fact, that's one very interesting thing to show that our society, and I'm interested to like go to like look at the history of China, if they always use the 7-day week to use as their way of keeping track of time. But sevens, clearly it's going back to the creation story in the Bible. So you have 6 days and the seventh day. Whether exactly, the day of rest, some will use the beginning of the work week, like let's say Sunday as their day of rest. But our, we go 7 days and then 6 days and culminates with the seventh day, being that day, the day of rest comes at the back end of the week, not the beginning. But either way, 7 days equals nature. The eighth day, or the 50th day, the thing that comes after the seven sevens, is going to be something that's beyond that. Or to say, it would be the, now I'm going to be the continuation of this creation, meaning God created the world in 7 days, And now what? Now what are you going to do with it? What's up to us to do with that? Usfartim Lachem is the same way that God orchestrated the whole first day of leaving Egypt. Now, guys, it's on you. You start counting. You start doing work. 7 times 7, or I get to the 50th. The 50th is the idea of taking it from there. Like, okay, now that we've gone through this process of nature times 7, which is basically the full expression of the natural, now let's go, okay, here are the keys, guys. You take the car and you drive it. So it's like this process. So what the real takeaway, or one of the takeaways, is that what's going on here is that God is saying to us, every year we come back, we're going out of Egypt, and we celebrate this divinely inspired night, day of being taken out of slavery. But now, if you really want to become free, now is where the work really starts, where you have to go through this process of 7 counting and going through this process of working through. Now, in the Kabbalistic thing, they talk about the Tikkun HaMidos, where you're supposed to work on yourself in 3 aspects. One is how you interact with interpersonal. The second is how you interact with God, your relationship with God. And then the third is just your relationship with yourself. Maybe it should be the reverse. It should be how you work on your own, what's going on inside your head, so to speak, how you feel about yourself, how you then interact with others, and how you interact with God. But these are the 3 things that are supposed to be focused on during this 7-week process of getting ready towards Shavuot, which is the revelation at Sinai. We celebrate that experience of meeting God, so to speak. So it's not like you can't just like show up and like, hey, I'm here. It's like, no, you got to work it through. So like you just said, like every year, it's like you come to Egypt, you come to the experience of the Exodus. You're at the Pesach Seder. You're celebrating that moment, and now it's like, okay. Great, had the flash of incredible inspiration, but now what do you do with it? So God's saying, you got a lot of work to do, guys. And it's an annual type of process where we are supposed to, like, Tikkun HaMidos, for 7 weeks, we focus on different aspects. On the Kabbalistic side, it's you go through the 7 lower realms of the Sefirot, which indicate different attributes. But it's really like a process time of like going through and trying to, you know, improve and get yourself ready. There's this idea of reading Pirkei Avot, that during this period of time, you take out Pirkei Avot and every week you read another chapter. And so Pirkei Avot has all this, like it's like a treasure chest of ideas of self-improvement. So that, you know, but it's this process of the 7 weeks that you're supposed to be working through these things. And what does it mean? It means that it's not just enough to get out of jail or get out of slavery. Now what are you going to do with it? You're supposed to become an elevated person. You're supposed to be a free person. The freedom, now that you're free, the idea is to take that freedom and do something with it and become, you know, take it up to that level of being what you would say is a source of, it's like, okay, so, you know, show me something special now of what you've become, of what have you done with this freedom that I've given you, you know? So it's an interesting idea that baked into it is a process where we need to now do some work. And so God's like, here are the keys, guys, start working, you know? Take out your Pirkei Avos. It's like, you know, we say it's like, it's great you learned something, but now you have to chazer, you have to review it and start, thinking about each thing more and more. And every time you read it, you're going to see something different always. That's the beauty of Torah, is that these are ideas, but we're all in a different place. So now when I come back to it and I read that thing again, it's like, oh, I never saw that part, or I never understood it that way, because we're different. I was reading last night, the OU or magazine. It's called Jewish Action. So they were writing this most recent issue was talking about Lord Jonathan Sacks, who passed away, and really like a remarkable person. He wrote like all these different books, and one of the things that one of the people that was commemorating or writing a eulogy, so to speak, and what he said, like, what can you learn from him? One of the things that was unique about him, he had this incredible intellectual curiosity, and he was constantly reading and exploring and just always like trying to learn new things. And so the idea, like, I think of a Jew, like, from what God is saying here, I want you to count, I want you to build, I want you to work towards a better, is that, like, as a Jew, like, no matter where we are, we're always supposed to be going further ahead and growing and becoming greater and better. And so that was like something that he, in his life, that's how he lived. Like, the person was saying that every time he came to visit him, he'd go to his bookcase, he'd come into this rabbi's house, and he'd look at his bookcase to see if there are new books that he had not read before, so that, and then he would pull those books off the shelf and start reading them. He was like, just had this incredible, thirst for knowledge. But I think that for us, like, coming out of Pesach, now we're on a pathway. We're 2 weeks into the count, so we have another 5 weeks to go. But the idea is to, like, just constantly try to add a little bit more, like the Rebbe, the Bab Shah Rebbe of blessed memory used to say. He's like, okay, I hear what you're doing. What more can you do now? Always pushing, but the truth is that if you have that mindset and you do it in a healthy way, so then you're always just, you're growing and building and getting to a better place.
Yes. Very nice.
Yeah. That's a story.
We still didn't resolve the issue of the 49 to 50 days is the counting from the first day of Pesach.
Correct. We're using that because that's really what we're doing, is we're building on that day. So the 49 count is with that gets you to 50. So normally, what's interesting? I think normally, the way you would read the Pesach is that the 50th day is the day of Shavuos, right? But the truth is, the way he's saying it is that no, when I culminate the 49 days, I'm using the first day of Pesach, and that's my 50. Right? That's my 50 count, because I'm really counting 50. But you're only counting 49. It's because my count is based on that first day of Shabbos, of which is Pesach, which I'm continuing the work of that day, meaning the day of inspiration, the day of coming out of Egypt was so powerful. Now I want to build on that. That's really what we're saying. Or now I'm working through, I have to work through that thing. It's like we did something there. And now I got to work. I couldn't capture because I wasn't ready for that. Who am I? I'm not ready for that. I'm such a simple slave. I'm not in that place.
That's kind of where I was going. So that then becomes, or that flash of spirituality or whatever, becomes the inspiration to prepare ourselves over the 50 days for getting the Torah and getting God's word and being worthy, in which case we actually failed anyway. And it took another 40 years to get to that point.
Even if we're still working through it, let's be honest. It's not, we're not. What's interesting is that the one thing that we did accomplish at Mount Sinai, and where we had a direct communication from God, was the first two of the Ten Commandments. That had to be, and we heard them, and it had to be direct from God to us without Moses in the middle. The other 611 mitzvot came through Moses, but those first two had to come direct from God to us. We experienced that, because what that was is us accepting God as our king. It had to be direct. It was like that. There's no, don't give me anybody in the middle, even though we needed Moses, because Moses was on a level where he could act as that bridge between us and God, because we really, the Torah is on a, it's on a level that needed someone that was able to attain a special prophetic level to be able to bring it down to us. And it, but those first two had to be direct, and that we did get ready. We, the 49 count got us to a place where we were at least able to experience that direct from God. It was on, it was overpowering. It was too much to handle. We like, you know, it was like, if you think about it, I mean, we're so, if God came and spoke to us directly, we would all just like, we would probably all die. I mean, it would just be overwhelming. It's like taking, the analogy is you take a, like a bright light and I shine it right in your face. You'd go blind. You go blind. It's blinding. Now take that to the spiritual realm. We're so not prepared. If God came and spoke to us, we'd be out. It would be over. We would have a nervous breakdown. It would totally be overwhelming. That's how come on, God can talk to me. I mean, no, it's not. It doesn't work that way. But that's, you know, so we did. So the fact is that we were able to prepare to get to that place where we were able to at least take that in. Whatever that experience was, you know.
So why then do they go in the desert 40 years, not 49 years?
So, but that really corresponds to what happened when the spies went into the land. It says that they went in for 40 days, and for 40 days, each day they got a year. That's where that came from, tells us in the Torah. Now 40 is a number also, because 40.
Well, that's the thing. It's got to be something to that, right?
No, but 40. There's the idea of fundamental change. Is always number 40.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So like you see, 40 is a number that talks about like real, like the idea that Moses went up to Mount Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights. And he went there multiple times for 40 days and 40 nights. So the number 40 is about change. Like, but it takes 40 to get it there. I mean, there are other examples of that, but that's that model. So it's interesting that you see that what we're doing today, where we just tied the chiddush of our shiur today, besides everything else, is that we just tied the number 40 into the idea of substantial change as well. Meaning that the 40 years in the desert was that substantial change that had to be. So there are two things. So we see, what we're saying basically is you need a process of 49 to be able to get ready to the 50th. That's what we do each year in this period. But in life, to be able to sometimes obtain a change that's really substantive, it could be 40 years. It could be that long. It could be sometimes 40 days. Like they talk about people going down to the Kotel and doing something for 40 days in a row, and that's going to bring some kind of, but that number 40 is at play also. But so 40, more like 40 years, like with even Moses, it says, you know, the crazy thing is that the whole idea of Shema, that prayer, that idea is only introduced after at the back end of the 40 years in the desert. And it says that it took Moses and everybody 40 years to be able to take that concept and that idea and like actually express it. And so there's that need for it takes time. Things take time. As human beings, it takes time.
None of them get to
what?
The promised land.
What is it?
I mean, none of them get to the promised land.
Correct. Or at least that group. So, like, you see that there was something that, it could be that that was part of the process also, that they that generation just did not have the tools to get there.
Wait, that group didn't get in?
The men.
No, that was part of the reason, I think, also for the 40 years, for anybody who was involved with the golden calf to perish, and then it's a new generation that came into Israel.
The people that and also the people that were involved with the whole sin of the spies, really. That's also that was right. That was
Wait, the ones who left Egypt were not the ones that actually entered the land.
That's correct. Well, the ones who were of 20, anyone that was 20 years old and above did not end up going. The people who left Egypt, of the men.
Guys, I apologize. I have to go. I have another call in about 2 minutes that I got to get ready for. But But thank you very much, and I will see you guys next week.
Okay.
Okay.
All the best.
I'm stunned here. Wait.
Okay. So those who were of age, we say 20 years old and above, of that generation that left Egypt, they all, not all, but majority of them perished in the desert. And so that the next, it was the next generation that entered the land.
Oh my God. I mean, they toil and for 40 years and after being a slave and they don't get to go in.
Right, because their kids end up going, but they themselves.
Wow. Okay. That's a whole lot.
It does. It puts a whole different spin on, you know, when they say, let's go back to Egypt. You know, why would they want to go back to Egypt? It's like, I don't want to die in the wilderness.
Right.
They all do.
Right.
And so, you know, like even the path of growth, it's like, okay, it's great to be on the path of growth. It's not guaranteed.
Right.
Yeah. It's a good result. You can die in the wilderness. like they all do. Like,
right.
Like the ones who didn't want to leave, like why would they want to stay? Why would they want to go back?
But there are exceptions, meaning it wasn't like 100, like there, meaning most, but not all. And again, it's tied really. You know what's interesting is that it's not as much, because you really could make a separation and say there are two issues. Those who wanted to go back to Egypt, or those who were not really ready, or didn't want to go into the land of Israel, right? That's really what was the issue when the spies come back with the negative report. Those who bought into that, so God says, okay, you're not going into Israel, because you didn't want to go into. You know, this was the time. And what's crazy is after they say, oh, we don't want to go, and then God says you can't go, and then they say, no, oh, we're ready to go now. It's like, God says that doesn't work that way.
It's like a toddler. Like, I want right? it, and I don't want it. Right? I want it, I meant it.
Yeah, right? So it's like, but that's, yeah, it's complicated, like you said, Steve. It was complicated. But you see that there's this, I mean, those who were, who didn't cry the night that they came back, when the spies came back and gave the negative report, there were plenty of people that didn't buy in, and they ended up going into the land of Israel. And that, like, for example, Kalev and Joshua, they end up going in. Because those are the two spies that came back with a positive report. So it wasn't like a, you know, straight across, like, you know, a zero sum. There were people that did go into the land. And a lot of it had to do with the fact, if you rejected the land, then you were, you know, initially, then you were not given passage in. So there was something about, not necessarily about the fact that they were still, you know, tied to Egypt, as much as they were not really ready or accepting of wanting to go into the land. So then the God, you know, God says, then you're not, sorry. It's not for you. And that's kind of like, you know, they talk about the idea of being really ready to live in the land of Israel. You have to be like, I'm in. I'm not going to stipulate, you know, I need this or that. Just go, be there. And somehow, you know, like you see, like people who do it with that attitude, they end up doing very well in Israel. But if you go in trying to think that you're going to, you know, dictate, the land of Israel says, no, it doesn't work that way. So that's kind of what happened then. It's still very, I think it's very much true today, even at the same, you know, that you have that issue as well. All right.
Interesting. Very interesting.
All right.
Thank you.
Have a great one.
Okay. All right.